Thank you very much for that warm welcome, and thank you very much for having a Sydney Friday coming to Melbourne. I have a few little friendly faces in the audience, so I know where the heck was coming from. I must acknowledge John Owen, because if it wasn't for John, I wouldn't be here today, because I was stuffing around in the foyer trying to find where I was going. He's extraordinary that he only saves important people. So thank you, John. Look, I will give a delivered speech. I'll probably deviate a little bit. So someone, and perhaps Mary, you might take this role. You might just wave to me if I'm lost. And I'm more than happy to take questions at the end, and I would really welcome some cross-table discussion, because this, frankly, is a learning experience for me too. Every time I talk to an audience, I actually come away having learnt more than what I'm sure I've delivered. So please use this as a forum to share across the room your comments and your experiences and your own case studies, because it's important that we don't keep reinventing the wheel and that we learn from each other, both our successes and our mistakes. Okay, so over the last 10 years, corporate philanthropy, in response to both community and government expectations, has evolved rapidly and grown from strength to strength. Corporate giving has encouragingly shifted from uncomplicated check handovers to more strategic, engaged, and outcomes-orientated approaches to philanthropy. Along the way, we've seen strong relationships between benefactors and beneficiaries forged, enabling the not-for-profits that are being supported to build their capacity and to strive for sustainability. However, the recent events of the economic downturn have posed a challenge for many corporate benefactors, with major implications for the not-for-profit sector. While many businesses expect to honour existing commitments, future funding is difficult to determine in the present climate, and I think we're all very aware that at the end of the financial year, in 2009, and I think really 2010 is actually going to be more of a test for us than the past 6 months. A 2008 Civil study confirmed this and advised charities to brace themselves for a rough ride. The report said there was a real threat that charities would be hit with a double whammy in the form of increased demand for services, and as times get tough, along with increased pressure on funding. And I'm sure that there are many of you in the audience who can actually attest to that, as we've seen that definitely happening. Similarly, Prime Minister Wright in April 2009 at a closed session on corporate philanthropy urged business leaders not to cut back on giving. He stated that corporate philanthropy is central to helping communities come to terms with the impact of the current time. However, questions do need to be asked. What role does corporate Australia play in funding and supporting the not-for-profit sector? And is this an appropriate expectation of corporate organisations? And then how does such community involvement impact other stakeholders, such as staff and shareholders? This debate has been strong for decades. It's not new, it's been going on for a very long time. And in 1970, economist Milton Friedman wrote this in the New York Times. The doctrine of social responsibility is fundamentally subversive. There is one and only one social responsibility of business: to use its resources and engage in activities designed to increase its profits. It flared again in the aftermath of the 2004 Boxing Day tsunami. The Australian Shareholders Association, in a statement that they actually hastily retracted, said firms shouldn't give money to disaster relief without shareholder approval or expecting something in return. The Business Council of Australia today countered with the argument that under the circumstances, businesses could in fact damage their reputation by not donating. Many newspaper editorials at the time called for business to be more generous, while in contrast, The Economist said, corporate philanthropy is charity with other people's money, which is not philanthropy at all. This is a morally dubious transaction. As you can see, there are many sharp and contrasting views, but today I feel that the debate has shifted. There now appears to be a greater sense of responsibility and accountability. The largest and most recent demonstration of this was a response to the tragic bushfires here in Victoria, and I don't need to tell a Victorian audience how tragic that was. But we did see an overwhelming outpouring of support, both by the Australian public and corporate Australia, and as we know, the appeal raised over $300 million. On a corporate level, most businesses, both large and small, dug deep. Macquarie Group, for example, as did many other large corporates, donated $1 million to the Australian Red Cross Victorian Bushfire Appeal, and our staff personally donated an additional $200,000, which we also matched dollar for dollar. So the question today is not whether business should be involved in the community, but rather how. What is the role of Corporate Australia in championing and inspiring philanthropy today? The report, Giving Australia, Research on Philanthropy, commissioned by the Department of Family and Community Services and released in October 2005, and disappointingly the most recent report, though I am assured that there is some work currently being done by Jeff Owen and the Owen Consulting Group, so we'll hopefully have more up-to-date figures soon, shows that business is giving to the community more than ever before. It found that Australian business donations of money, goods and services more than doubled in the 3 years to 2003-04, from $1.5 billion to $3.3 billion, and I'm hoping that that figure will be much larger now. However, that still doesn't amount to half the $7.7 billion donated each year by individuals, according to the same report. But it is encouraging to see that business giving is growing at a greater rate. Nor do the figures tell the whole story about the extent of business involvement in the community. The Macquarie Group Foundation, for example, gave over $18 million in grants to about 900 community organisations to the end of our financial year, which is 31st of March. Macquarie staff raised and donated an additional $7.7 million. So our total contribution for the year was over $25 million. These are the figures that we quote publicly as an expression of our community involvement. But that's only our monetary contribution. We don't place a dollar value, unlike some of our competitors, on the many hours of service given by Macquarie staff in the volunteer, pro bono, board and executive capacities for not-for-profit organisations. I suspect, and I know, that it would run into the millions. Certainly, to the many organisations that receive this support, it is invaluable. Needless to say for our staff, and this is very important, the opportunities afforded to them are also invaluable, and in some cases, I would even say more important. There have been many reasons over the years for the increasing level of business involvement in the community. The most common is that the community demands it. Today, it also needs it. Others say that with government funds at a premium, it is the responsibility of business to bridge the funding gap. At the other end of the spectrum, there are those who argue that community buying with businesses actually improves their bottom line. All of these reasons suggest a vested interest. That companies get involved in communities because they have to, that they need a social license to operate, that they need to present a business case. In most corporations, I'd argue that there is a genuine community spirit. The challenge for business is a way to find, to harness it and to benefit that business. As I said earlier, there is already a $7.7 billion donated each year by individuals. Also, according to the 2006 Voluntary Work Survey released by the ABS, 34% of the Australian population aged 18 years and over participate in voluntary work. At Macquarie, we recently conducted our own survey into staff volunteering. On average, Macquarie staff members who are active in their communities will each spend about 117 hours volunteering in a year, which about works out to be about 3 weeks of the year spent on community outreach. So people are giving more and getting more involved. And the key here is that these people in most cases also work. So they're not diverse from the business sector. They are part of your organisation. They want to work with organisations that reflect their personal community values. Throw the Gen Y guys into the mix, and we've got a really interesting challenge. Aged, as we know, in their late teens and early 20s, and as they come to Macquarie, they're all probably about 22, 23, they are entering the workforce now and asking their prospective employees about their corporate responsibility programs. University graduates applying to Macquarie specifically ask about our community involvement, We do a lot of roadshows to university campuses globally, and wherever our HR staff go, they say, okay, you're an investment bank, we know what investment banks are, so what do you do in the community? Tell us about what you do in the community. We want to know how we can maintain and grow our sense of responsibility as individuals into the workplace. It's been very important for us with overseas graduates as well. Anecdotally, of course, Macquarie, we all know who Macquarie is in Australia, and if you don't know, you obviously haven't read a newspaper and a bad headline for us. But once we go offshore, it's sometimes a little bit difficult. And often what we find is that the grads on those overseas campuses will come up to the HR girls or boys and say, well, what is Macquarie? Oh, okay, all right, well, but what do you do? Well, you know, you're in Australia, what do you do about our community? What do you know about us? And the foundation is a terrific tool for the HR people to actually talk about how we engage at a local level. The interest has been so great from our grads that we have created a program especially for this. The Macquarie Graduate Volunteer Network, VBN, is championed by Macquarie graduates to undertake volunteer and fundraising activities throughout the year for their chosen not-for-profit organisation. The volunteer program, which we started in Sydney in 2006, now operates out of New York, London and Hong Kong. Now there was method in my madness with this. We have a lot of new graduates coming to the organisation in most years, maybe not this year, but most years. It provides an opportunity for them to get to know each other, so it's actually a personal support network for them. It gives them a focus beyond work. I guess one of my battles at Macquarie would be about work-life balance, so it actually shows them a little bit about the outside world. They get to do social things because we say they want you to fundraise as well as volunteer. So the fundraising of wine tastings, or we've got a group this year organising a big cocktail party ball thing. So it gets them working across the divisions as well, because when they come, they immediately get siloed into whichever business division they're in. But the Graduate Volunteer Network is across the businesses, across the Chinese wall. So again, the grads are coming in, they're networking so they can see it from a professional perspective, personal professional perspective, but they're also keen to be engaged with the communities in which they're working as well. For example, in 2008, the Graduate Volunteer in Sydney supported the Spastic Centre of New South Wales, Mission Australia, and the Country Education Foundation of Australia. Now, the Country Education Foundation was an interesting choice. We encouraged the grads to choose their own charity, and they came up with Country Education Foundation because it's a grassroots organisation that provides scholarships for rural and regional students to come to university. And they saw that that is a really important synergy for them, so there was a very much a personal connection, raising money to help kids stuck out in the country who didn't have access to university to provide scholarships for them to come to university. In Hong Kong, they've raised funds for a Sunnyside School, which is a school for children with developmental and learning difficulties. They've done some working bees. A couple of years ago, the grads in Sydney raised money during the year through social activities and then spent two weekends refurbishing and redeveloping some institutional homes for the Spastic Centre in consultation with residents in those homes. However, this is not an isolated staff initiative. A key objective of our foundation is to support and involve Macquarie staff in the community. It's actually not a particularly difficult task for us. Staff involvement, be it volunteering or fundraising, is greater than the last. The foundation has in place a range of initiatives that promote giving and inform staff about the foundation's activities and the good things that we see them doing in the community. We publish a quarterly online newsletter, Macquarie in the Community, which outlines some of the foundation's programs, but essentially focuses on Macquarie staff and what they're undertaking in the community. And the reason we started that was to actually show, by example, what their colleagues were doing. And it's had an enormous effect on us. So if they're reading about the guy who sits next to them actually doing some community work, or sitting on the board of a not-for-profit, or having a team fundraising, it's actually had a snowballing effect in spreading that message. So those newsletters are global. We have a central piece of the newsletter which talks about what's happening all around the world with various anecdotal stories, and then we have a page that diverges to particular regions, so there's also some relevance to that particular region. We promote the foundation programs that staff can utilise, and in particular our staff donation support scheme. What that scheme does is it encourages staff to give. I'd be one thing before I die is to be able to say that hopefully I have made Macquarie backers for less. So they donate personally or they fundraise personally. Those donations and fundraising efforts are matched dollar for dollar. There is a cap of $100,000 per person per donation on the personal fund, personal donating, but there is no cap on the fundraising. So we might have a staff member who raised $250,000 for an organisation through his organisation as a fundraising event. We might have a staff member who raises $50. We'll have a staff member who donates $100, $50, and we have staff members who donate $100,000. They are matched. We encourage senior staff community involvement by providing a $10,000 community participation grant for organisations on which Macquarie staff serve in a board executive capacity. Again, this was an attempt to develop capacity within the not-for-profit sector to get the skill sets that we feel that are very important and very vital to our own business out into that community sector. So by encouraging our very senior staff to go onto the boards of not-for-profits and to actually stay on the boards of not-for-profits, that $10,000 grant kicks in up to 12 months of board service and has proved to be enormously successful. We also run Macquarie Giving, which is our payroll giving program, which is in addition to the staff support program. And with payroll giving, as you know, it's a small amount of money that's taken out of your pay each week or each fortnight, given to a charity of your choice, and we match that as well. And at the moment, we're supporting around 411 different organisations through that payroll program to the UK, Australia, America, and Hong Kong and Singapore. We have Macquarie Staff in the Community Awards, where we honour and celebrate staff and their particular activities. Again, that was to use them as examples and to demonstrate to staff how important it was to be involved in the community. It's not about saying that your volunteering is better than the next person's volunteering. It was really just a way to highlight the diversity of organisations that staff support. So we had about 23 awards in 2009 from organisations as diverse as Saving Dogs in Korea, which we might talk about the political ramifications of that, to a young woman in Tokyo working for the Japanese Association for Refugees, to another staff member who ran the Great War of China to raise money for UNICEF at the time of the Sichuan earthquake, and so on and so forth. So diversity, breadth, what is it that turns you on, what's your passion, whatever your passion is, that's the passion that will back. We don't want to direct you into a particular company line or a particular company organisation. It is very much about our people and what they want to support wherever they are. We have what are called community advisory committees. They're located across the globe, made up of volunteer staff, and those committees sit in those offices, and they are the ones that we use to be our ears and our eyes around what's happening in that local community. So they take a hands-on role in recommending organisations for community grants. They drive our local staff volunteering and fundraising efforts. And as I said earlier, as a result of these efforts, we have been able to, every year since about 2002, increase our staff giving by a factor of about a mil to 2 mil. So this year it was 7.7, last year it was 5.7, the year before it was 4.1, the year before it was 2, and so forth. We've not driven this involvement, we've supported it, nurtured it, and encouraged it. Staff have seized the opportunity, often quite inventively. Several years ago, for example, members of our investment banking team came up with an idea to spend one-on-one time with children experiencing reading difficulties. They approached the local inner-city school in Sydney, because it needed to be fairly close to work, so it was pretty busy, and offered their services as lunchtime reading buddies. Two investment bankers to each child, because our boys are on the road all the time, so if you can't be there this week, you know that your buddy will be there, so that there's constant students. These are some of our busiest staff working around the clock transactions. But every Wednesday, the bus rolls up at work. They go down with their families and eat their families in the bus. And they make their way to Darwin Coast Public School to read with their bodies. We now have two schools in Sydney, one here in Melbourne, and a school in Hong Kong and a school in London. It involves over 300 staff supporting from 150 children. And these kids are identified by the school, so they're pulled out of class. They're the ones that are the poor readers, poor socialisation skills. A lot of them, the schools that we work with, and often in cases, kids don't have male role models, so it's an opportunity for them to engage, in most cases, with men in groups as well. Both teachers and parents have reported a marked improvement in the children's reading skills and their social interactions, while our staff get a real sense of achievement from helping out in such a tangible way. Staff in our banking and financial services group, which is the retail arm of Macquarie, are also testament to the great initiative and passion shown supporting community organisations. This group has supported juvenile diabetes research in Australia for more than 7 years, and in this time has raised millions of dollars. Started as two staff who had a child with juvenile diabetes, we have now staff across Australia participating in the fundraising events that Dirty RS holds every year. Staff are the largest corporate supporters of Dirty RS in Australia. We have staff serving on state fundraising committees. We have a senior Macquarie staff member as Vice President of Dirty RS Australia. And we are now developing a relationship with JDRF internationally, so we are running programs through London, Houston and New York as well with JDRF. While social benefits are obvious for these engagements, there are many advantages for our staff as well. It actually enables our staff to expand their horizon and develop skills beyond the physical requirements of their job. It allows them to gain greater insights into the communities in which they live and work, and increase their knowledge and understanding of social issues. This was brought home to me a couple of years ago. Our IT department is led by an amazing man called Nigel Smyke, and Nigel has a strong community sense. So he encourages the IT guys in our offices globally to become involved in the community, and IT is pretty special because most not-for-profits can't afford good, strong IT skills and expertise. And I placed a group of IT staff into an organisation called Inspire Foundation, which is an internet-based service that keeps going through tough times, and runs a program called Reach Out. They needed a new CRM, customer relation management, donor management software package. And so these guys went in, assessed what they needed, developed a brief for them, helped them interview and choose the provider of this donor management system, and we recognised the work that they've done with Community Award, Opportunity Award, and so Inspire people came in for the presentation. And the thing that struck me was that, I don't know about you guys, but when there's a problem with IT or with the computer, it's never your fault. It's always the computer's fault, and the next person that you bark at is the IT guy. Why can't you fix it? I need it now. Just get on with it. These IT guys to Inspire were gods, because they had come into the organisation, had waved their magic wand with their skills, fix the problem, and the absolutely palpable pride and sense of achievement that they had passed on to those fellows was something they would never get at work. So it was just an extraordinary affirmation to them that in fact they were pretty special, and they had pretty good skills, and they did get taken for granted at work, but in fact could add enormous value to this community organisation. And we have hundreds and hundreds of staff at any one time around the globe in the IT area working. We had the IT staff in Hong Kong ring the other day to say that, and I won't go into why, but we had 50 odd surface computers, and they were being recalibrated by the staff, software loaded onto them, and then they were wanting us to help them choose a range of not-for-profits in Hong Kong that they would go and deliver the computers. What it does is it generates an ongoing dialogue between the two sectors as well. So the not-for-profit gets to understand the Macquarie banker from a different side, and the Macquarie banker gets to see a side of the world that they probably don't come into contact with a lot. And that's very fundamental to meaningful community engagement. It also facilitates teamwork within Macquarie itself, and it greatly enhances staff morale. and it engenders a philanthropic spirit within our organisation and gives our staff a sense of ownership of Macquarie's community activities. We're very proud of our community engagement. This has had particularly interesting ramifications for our overseas offices. Macquarie operates in many emerging markets, in countries where there is extreme poverty and little in the way of social infrastructure. So many of our Australian staff post overseas because what we tend to do is we parachute in the senior staff from Australia, either in the acquisition of a business or in the start of a new business, and then we slowly acquire and bring on board local staff, but those senior roles are always from the Macquarie of Sydney or Melbourne or whatever. For many staff from Australia, this is their first experience of such conditions. Relocation to any overseas location presents its own challenges. Staff face the demands of building new businesses in markets where Macquarie's name is not well known. Their spouses are often uprooted from their own careers, and their families have to adapt to new cultures and environments. This can be particularly confronting when it's into a developing nation, and staff often feel compelled to do something about the problems they see in their new communities. Most bankers are type A personalities, so they want to get in and fix it now. Many of them have had no previous experience of community involvement, but the poverty and disadvantage that they see triggers for both of them and their families an active and sometimes life-changing community involvement. In these cases, the Foundation supports the efforts of both our staff and their families. Since transferring to Hong Kong, one of our senior executives and his wife have provided extensive volunteer and financial support to three organisations, International Care Ministries, Crossroads and International China Concern, all who work to alleviate poverty in the slum communities of the Philippines and China. Harry and his wife have personally helped rebuild houses for some of the poorest families in the Philippines and are now working with Macquarie staff in Hong Kong to raise funds to build more than 100 houses in another of the city's slum communities. But they also go on working beats. So we might have 20 or 30 staff setting out on a Friday afternoon out of Hong Kong down to a place called Bacalan in the Philippines with their kids and their wives, and they work for the weekend rebuilding their slums. And they're pretty rough. They're knee-deep in all sorts of stuff, and they're engaging with the communities, they're creating a new life for them, and then they fly back on Sunday night and go back to work on Monday. In India, the wife of our head of equities, along with several other expat women, developed a 300-page guide to Mumbai for expats. The proceeds after cost donated to a range of Mumbai charities. This same couple also provided strong support to a new organisation called the Foundation for Mother and Child Health in India, a charity established to improve the lives of mothers and children in local communities by providing programs focused on health, nutrition, education and skills training. The results of the various programs are outstanding as they affect the decrease in malnutrition rates among children. Karen there was the driving force for that organisation. She garnered other expat women. They identified the best workers out of other community organisations, local workers, to build that program up. Came to us for funding, so we're funding the program. And it's been terrific. Unfortunately, as often happens at Macquarie, Karen and Stuart have now been transferred to Tokyo, but already Stuart's only been offered in Tokyo for a couple of weeks. I've had an email from him saying, when are you coming to Tokyo? We've got to do stuff here. So he's taken that with him to the next place. And he's left in place for the new office head a whole system of committee and activities. So I'm actually going to Mumbai in a couple of weeks to see what's happening there. What's happened is that the families have become enmeshed in the community. So they're there not as Macquarie from Sydney or Macquarie from Australia, but they're Macquarie working in the local community side by side with the local staff. So it means that they become very quickly into the part of their new community. But what it also does is it helps us to see and demonstrate to our local staff that we engage and employ that this is part of the Macquarie culture. It's very easy entry point for them to like get to understand a little bit more about this growing company that they've joined. And it also shows to them that we have strong community values, but it's strong community values in their local community. It's not something that we're translating from Australia. In addition to our encouragement of staff activities, Macquarie Group Foundation seeks to provide a broad leadership role in its community engagement. We do this in a number of ways. We aim to be generally responsive to community needs, and we've seen that through the way that we have flexible funding, where we support over 900 charity organisations. This large number is unique among corporate foundations today, and we make sure that it is because of that staff engagement. We also have some partnerships that we view as truly groundbreaking. Last year, we extended our partnership with the Cape York Institute for an additional 3 years to enable top Indigenous students in a region where as few as 6% complete high school to attend Queensland's elite boarding school. This program is part of a broader agenda to build a sustainable Cape York community and economy. Today, we have 35 Indigenous students on the program from years 8 through to year 12. We've had 5 graduate school and are all in tertiary studies. In June 2008, building on the partnership and the relationship that our staff have with juvenile diabetes research, we have committed $2 million to developing a new research blueprint for type 1 diabetes. Furthermore, we've assisted with the international expansion of one of our partners, the Inspire Foundation that I mentioned earlier. We've funded Inspire to go to the US and Ireland. We have staff who are on the board of those organisations. They build a new model. They use the Macquarie model to actually take a not-for-profit model to the world. We also look to stimulate thought leadership within the community sector. We have a long-term funding arrangement with Mission Australia. We fund their social policy and research unit, which conducts both Mission Australia's research for key social issues, but also helps them to inform government and other not-for-profits around the needs of the community. We aim to develop strong partnerships with our community partners. We fund programs over 3 to 5 years, facilitating ongoing dialogue with the organisations that we support. So it's not just a check and see you later, guys. It's a check, it's staff, it's board membership, it's leadership programs, it's tutoring, it's a whole range of things. We use our staff in many ways in these engagements with our not-for-profit partners. We seek to build skills within the sector. We provide workshops using the skills that we have internally. We run media management skills workshops. We run brand marketing, HR workshops. We place financial planners into organisations to develop a new financial plan or a new business plan. We also hold workshops where we'll bring a diverse group of not-for-profits together, really just through the fact. I had one the other day where we brought in about 18 different not-for-profits from all different sectors to just talk about how with the current economic climate affecting them, what was right for somebody, who was doing this, who was doing that. The multi-tiered support we provide to not-for-profit organisations we view as a unique feature of our community involvement. It results in deep and enduring community relationships and ensures we provide an appropriate response to existing community needs. An example of this can be found in the aftermath of the 2006 Social Innovation Dialogue, which we hosted with Mission Australia. The dialogue brought together about 60 senior executives from corporate, government and community sectors, cabinet members, departmental heads, CEOs and not-for-profit leaders. It was a 3-day retreat in Hunt Valley, and through those 3 days we looked at ways that the three sectors could work together to deliver the best social outcomes. One of the points repeatedly made by community leaders was that where they could obtain corporate funding for specific programs, there was no funding available for strategic growth or for capacity building. As a result of that, the Macquarie Group Foundation created a new category of funding specifically for capacity building. We've inundated with inquiries, and since the introduction in 2007, we've made more than 16 grants for over $6.9 million. The Macquarie Group Foundation has subsequently developed and hosted another 2 social innovation summits. One in 2007 in the UK, and again last year in Australia. Both events initiated necessary dialogue and brought about initiatives to find new ways of addressing social needs. The outcomes from the 2008 one last year included a recommendation for action report that was presented to our federal government for consideration as part of the development of this strong social inclusion agenda. Since then, the government has accepted our social innovation fund concept, which will be established in conjunction with the corporate and not-for-profit sectors to support existing or pilot initiatives, and it's part of the Job Network program. I had a text or an email the other day from one of our speakers at the summit, who was a terrific New Yorker called Woody McCutcheon from the Edmund McConnell Clark Foundation. And Woody had been one of the speakers, as I said, and he sent me a message to say that the Obama administration had obviously had a spy in the Hunter Valley, because he just set up his own social innovation fund as part of the 2010 budget. I don't think we can quite comb for that one. Another summit outcome was part of our commitment to social innovation. We've just recently pledged $2 million over 10 years to the establishment of the Macquarie Group Foundation Professor Centre for Social Impact, which Peter Schergold holds. I'm sure you're all familiar with the CSI's objective, which is to drive social innovation and funding to promote social responsible business management. We have Macquarie staff both on the CSI board and on the executive committee. As I hope I've tried to tell you today, the argument is strong. The corporate Australia to help fund and support the not-for-profit sector. However, genuine community engagement doesn't just happen. It's not a matter of just establishing a corporate foundation or making the staff available for occasional day of volunteering. It requires first and foremost an understanding of community needs, which can only be gained by listening closely to those who work in the not-for-profit sector. It requires a commitment to addressing those needs in a generally responsive manner in partnership with community organisations. And it requires the engagement of your staff if it is to become an intrinsic part of your business culture. The results and outcomes, I feel, of our strong global community investment program speak for themselves. And so while the current climate is a new challenge, it's one that we embrace and seek a solution for, to ensure continued strong and gained support for our community partners.